thinking back about the beginnings of this meeting and what one of the reasons was for the formation of this meeting. And basically it was set up to be a place where literature-based recovery experience and methodology could be shared in an open format. Really, until that time, at least in this general area, there was no meetings where you could specifically do that. There were just basically the normal meetings, speaker, step, discussion. But there was really a need for a place where you could find more about the mechanics of recovery, more about the mechanics of the 12-step process. And that's basically why this meeting started to present that, to get different people together who have different experiences, but basically who have a literature-based recovery process underneath their belt, who could talk a little bit about that experience. And that's what we've done, and this meeting will be 5 years old in December. And so I'm kind of glad about that. Now, when you think about first-year sponsorship, that really is probably the key time in someone's recovery and somebody's sobriety. You can make or break someone's chances of staying sober in that period of time. So obviously, it's important to understand the best methods of sponsoring. Again, in AA in this area, there was every type of method of sponsoring, and you could imagine when I first came in, and probably still today, people sharing what they got, which is typical. That's kind of what you do. But one of the things that I've found through my own personal experience and my experience working with others is that your chances are greatly increased of staying sober and recovering from alcoholism if you follow the directions in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. There's something amazing about the process. It's basically designed to change us from untreated alcoholics to treated alcoholics, to people who have treated their illness and put their illness in remission. We talked last week, I talked last week about literature-based sponsorship and why that's important to have that piece of the puzzle. It's only one piece of the puzzle. It's not the only thing you need to know about sponsoring. There's other things, and Mary Beth is going to be talking about some of those tonight. I remember meeting Mary Beth. I was in the Basking Ridge. I think it was either the Monday or the Wednesday night Basking Ridge meeting back about 1992 or 3. And I remember she was sharing about wanting to buy a town in Pennsylvania so that she could decorate all the houses and dress all the children the same, you know, so it would be like a perfect little town. And there was something intriguing about that, you know. Later we started dating, and I found out that, well, it was kind of apparent to me that she was a redheaded Irish Catholic alcoholic born on mischief night. Now, you know us alcoholics, we like trouble, so anyway, we started dating, we fell in love, and we got married, and we've since done a lot of work with other alcoholics, working with others. And when I thought about this topic for this particular workshop up at the Wilson House, Mary Beth came to mind first, because I don't think I've ever seen anybody work more intensively and create the healing atmosphere that she's able to generate with her sponsees in the first year. I've never seen anybody better. Not only does she take you through the steps, but there's a million other little things that you're going to find very, very handy learning how to get sober, and she's very, very good at those. So without further ado, I'm going to turn the meeting over to Mary Beth, and she's going to talk about first-year sponsorship.
Thank you, Chris. And it's all true. I am an Irish Catholic redheaded alcoholic born on Mischief Night, and sometimes I do well with that, and other times I don't. But I do work with a lot of people. Chris is right about that, and I'm the lucky one. And tonight I was thinking, well, when it's time to present, you know, what are the two things I need to keep in mind to keep me humble, and which I always need to be. And one of them was I'm going to, you know, remember what my sponsor always says to me, which is, and she's got 20 million years sober. She says a good sponsor is someone that no matter what the people you sponsor do, you don't drink. And that reminds me of what Bill Wilson, how Bill Wilson started Alcoholics Anonymous was. He went and found another drunk to stay sober. So with my sponsor in mind and the newcomer also in mind, you know, I'll present on the first year sponsorship. There is a reason that I sponsor, and that is a perfect example was tonight. I had an emergency dental appointment at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and actually practically drove my car right up on the lawn, and I almost choked the nurse, and I almost ripped the other person out of the chair and stole the doctor because I was in so much pain. And at the end of the whole thing, I did not die, although I thought I was going to. And in the end, the doctor said to me, well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you some Vicodin. And I said, well, you know, I prefer, this is after, like, being hysterical in her office. I said, I'm much calmer now, and I would prefer to have something not narcotic. And she said, well, I'm not giving you 100. She said, I'm just giving you a prescription for 15. And I just started to laugh to myself. And so that's why I sponsor, so I don't take these things. And just to give you an idea of what I do, almost 15 years sober, is I called my sponsor right away. I told my husband, and I called my sponsor right away, and I said, here's what she wants me to take. I'm in a lot of pain. What should I do? And she gave me her experience when she was in the hospital and what happened when she came home with some really bad pain and what she did. And I ended up not taking the Vicodin, not getting the prescription filled, but I will research where I can find an emergency pharmacy tonight, and took something simpler instead. So the reason I sponsor really is so that I don't drink, and because of this sentence, and it's in the 12 and 12, and it's the ninth tradition, page 174. It says, unless each AA member follows to the best of his ability our suggested 12 steps to recovery, he almost certainly signs his own death warrant. And I was joking the other day about my story and when I had a nervous breakdown right before I got sober, and I can laugh about that today, but at the time it was really serious. I had said I wanted to die, and they put me in the psych ward. And when I'm working with newcomers, I go on like high alert. And I don't know whether that's because I grew up in a big family where you always have to know where everybody is at all times, but you know, make sure you get ahead and stuff. And so I stay on high alert because I start to listen for things that I need to hear about what they're saying and what it is that could take them back out for a drink even an hour later. And I have had people drink an hour later. And one of them came very, very close to dying and has since gone back out again and could again. But the thing is, I pay attention, I guess, if there's anything that I stress the most is I pay attention and I really listen to what they're saying, and I listen for a history of some really serious damaging things they might have gone through in the beginning. And I'm talking about women specifically because I sponsor women. And I know that there is one thing, one secret maybe that they'll have that could make them want to drink and die, because I did want to die. So I don't ever take the newcomer lightly. And I also watch for outward appearances, too, because they'll come in dressed to the nines like I did. You know, I had everything matched. I had jewelry and I had all this stuff, and I looked really, really together on the outside. But on the inside, I was falling apart. And actually, to date, I'm really, really surprised that I made it without drinking. And so another thing that I do is I watch really the way I treat them, and I'm blessed to have only two sponsors for my entire recovery period, and this first sponsor really never hurt me. She never said anything to hurt me. She loved me in a way that I was really surprised that someone could love me, because I felt that I was such a piece of garbage. And I had a situation last night. I was watching a new guy. He's new, and I don't know if he's here, but I don't see him. But he was really shaky and uncomfortable with himself, and I could see he was really uncomfortable in his environment. And I started to talk to him about my story. And I noticed that he was responding to me, identifying with him, but I also noticed that he carried a tremendous amount of shame and a tremendous amount of remorse and regret that he had this moral dilemma. And I tried to show him through my own experience, and this is what I do with my girls. I'm going to call them my girls because it's shorter that way, is that I try not to do anything with them that will shame them, and I try to remember what Dr. Silkworth talked about in the doctor's opinion, that you know, this is not a moral disease that we have. You know, if it was a moral disease and we could pull ourselves up by the bootstraps, as the scientific community used to think we could do, we would have done it. And when Dr. Silkworth talks about the powers of good in his, I think it's his second letter, he's talking about the powers of God. And so I keep that in mind when I see... I know from my experience that the solution to the alcoholism is a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. So I start with them here, and I know what's happened to me here. And so then somewhere in between, I have to fill my message to them with depth and weight. And since last week we talked about Chris covered the literature-based sponsorship, I don't need to get into that so much, but my message does... the way I sponsor does commit to that, and there are three really sections to my sponsorship, and one is take the women through the book, or at least through the steps. There's been so many big book workshops here lately that I've been allowing that process to take place, and then I take them through the steps. I also introduce them to the fellowship, which is a really, really big part of my recovery. And I don't think I'd be here today if you weren't here, because I certainly wouldn't go to an AA meeting if none of my friends were there, or I wasn't connected with anybody, or there weren't people there that I identified with. So I take them through the work and the fellowship. And that is sort of the basis for everything else that comes after it. I would just want to read you a little bit from page 89. It says in the chapter, Working with Others, practical experience shows us that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Well, everything that I really have to say comes from here. I don't have to make it up. It's takes all of the pressure off of me, that's for sure. When you discover a prospect for Alcoholics Anonymous, you find out all you can about him. If he doesn't want to stop drinking, don't waste your time trying to persuade him. You'll hear a lot in the program, there's attraction, in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's attraction, not promotion. And I always thought that that meant that, you know, you leave the newcomer alone and let him sort of spin dry. And to a certain extent, I do that. The attraction, not promotion, really doesn't involve us inside of Alcoholics Anonymous. If I see someone new, I try to bring them my enthusiasm for recovery and the fact that I had a spiritual awakening to give them hope. So do I sit on them and lecture them? No. Do I tell my story? Yes. Do I try to introduce them to other women? And you know, sometimes people, friends of my husband's that I trust, that that might have something that could help them, I'll introduce them to those people. Between pages like 90 and 95, there's so many instructions for working with others. Don't deal with him when he is very drunk. You know, I have done that early on without the help of a sponsor. So now if someone's really drunk, I make sure there's other people with me and that they get to someplace that can, that, or I at least stay safe because I can't help anybody who's really sick. I mean, who's really violent. And I do know of situations where drunk people have thrown chairs and the police have had to be called and that kind of thing. So I try to wait and get some expert advice either from my sponsor or from someone else who has more time than me or who has experience like I do, and we all work together to try and see whether or not we can help this other person or send him on to a rehab. But at any rate, I do pass them along to or I do try to take them through the book if I can. At least I get them started on the doctor's opinion and Bill's story so that they can help identify themselves as an alcoholic, and I can listen to that and see whether or not I think they are, because not everybody who comes in really is an alcoholic. I always thought that they were, and that's not necessarily true. Sometimes they end up here and they you know, through court or something like that. But on page 108, it starts there with the four descriptions of the different alcoholics in the stages, and between the two of us, we see if this is the right place for them, because if it is, their life can be incredible, and if it's not, they learn a few things, and I learn a few things, but I find that the people who really identify with me generally end up being the alcoholics, and there are other people who are on that have problems other than alcohol that I find sort of go off to the wayside a little bit, and they stop identifying with me to a certain extent and possibly move on. I also try to see if they have a belief in a higher power, and I'm very careful in that area. There is someone that I worked with whose higher power was nature, and I remember thinking they had just asked me to sponsor them, and I thought, well, okay, I've heard of people who had higher powers that were doorknobs, but eventually they got over it, and what do I do here? And then I thought, you know, her higher power is nature, and so what I did was respected that, and I would talk to her about, you know, what the wind and what it meant to her, and if you knew me in the olden days, I was very, very judgmental. You had to believe in the God of my childhood and, you know, all this, my character defects, you know, that I had all the answers. And today I realized that if her higher power was nature and that's going to help save her life, then I'm very supportive of that. And her personal journey regarding her higher power is hers. And I remember having a discussion with this person recently, and you know, I said, what are you looking for in a sponsor? And she said, someone who will talk to me about God. And my simple answer to that was, the steps will, your own personal steps will help you find your God. And I can talk to you, I can be a priest, I can be a minister, I can share my story of how God worked in my life, even tonight with the ibuprofen worked, you know. I allow the step process to show them their God, and sometimes it's through an easy journey, and sometimes it's through a difficult journey, as I try to stay somewhat sane through both of them. But what I wanted to talk about was taking the women just a little bit through the steps. I had an experience where, you know, when we talk about the message of depth and weight, I had an experience where someone was coming to my house for steps 1, 2, and 3, And it takes time to do that. You know, it's not something that's like, you know, takes 5 minutes. And I had a feeling that this person with the trauma that was going on in her life was on very shaky ground. And I'll tell you why I knew that, because I really do mean it when I listen and I look for signs, which also takes a commitment of time. And that's what people did with me, so that's why I passed that along. And this person was on her way over, and she called me on the phone, on the cell phone, and said, I'm thinking, oh, we're going to meet in 15 minutes. And she goes, I don't know what to do. There's the bar, the liquor store is over there, and I'm on, you know, right in Bernardsville, you know, like I'm 5 minutes from the liquor store and 15 minutes from your house. And I want a drink, and I thought, my first thing is, oh, God. What do I do? Because you know, sometimes you're just like, oh, God, help me. And my first reaction is, oh, God, help me, because what if I say the wrong thing, you know? And so I said my, oh, God, help me, and God helped me. And whatever I said, the person ended up at my house. And what she said to me in the car was really interesting. She said, I don't have any tools. I don't have any tools for coping with this. And I knew what was going on in her life, and I knew that the tool, you know, you sometimes you can't cope, and I couldn't cope either in the beginning. And what was interesting is that the tools I was about to hand her were the 1, 2, and 3. And she's still sober, and she's had a lot more trauma since then. And we go through that day by day, sometimes hour by hour. I try to explain to the women that our problem is in the mind. And when I first came into AA, people, I didn't know this. I was sponsored a little bit differently. I didn't know that. I thought I drank because I drank. I thought I drank because I was an alcoholic. And what I didn't realize was that I drank for the effect, and that the problem was in the mind. I didn't know that until I had about 9 years sober, and I had my own crisis, and I went through the big book with someone. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. The problem's in the mind. I drank for the effect. And my solution was the booze. And so now when this person said to me in the car, I don't have any tools for dealing with this, I was giving her a new effect. This was, you know, I gave her the tools to take care of it. And that effect would be a spiritual awakening as opposed to a drunk. And what an amazing, amazing process. So I wanted to just read that one little, it's all over the place in here, but in More About Alcoholism, it talks about this. It reminded me of another woman I sponsored. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be a nice idea to have a couple of cocktails and dinner. That was all, nothing more, you know? And then on page, let's see, 23... is. Therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in the mind rather than his body. And I never knew that. You know, I just thought I was born with this allergy to alcohol, and I drank because I had to have the alcohol. And so at any rate, I try to explain that the problem is in the mind, and I see a lot of relief on people's faces when I tell them about that. In their fourth step, the onus is on them. To do the work, and I get various four steps, and this brings me to various types of four steps come in front of me when it's time to hear a fifth step. I have sponsored a lot of women, and what I've found looking back is that I sponsor each one a little bit differently, because some people will come into AA. I had one girl once who was actually afraid to walk across the room because people would look at her, so she couldn't come into an AA meeting. So I had to handle her one way. And someone else would come in, dressed really slovenly, so men wouldn't look at her, and I handled her a different way too. And when it comes to four steps, I learn a lot about a person by what they bring me. And I've had anything from people writing out their four step on little scraps of dirty paper that have been on the floor of their car, all ripped up and in different color inks, and they did it on the fly. And then I have other people who come, honest to God, with notebooks tabbed. Mm-hmm. And they're very organized, and they're color-coded, and they're highlighted. And what's amazing that what happens in the fifth step, so the onus is on them to do their fourth step, but I learned something about where they are with their dignity or where they are with maybe OCD issues or other things that if I weren't paying attention, I might not kind of glean from that process. And what happens, though, in their fifth step with me all of the time is the same process. They seem to get free. So however they do it, it's not up to me. It's their journey. I show them the forms that I use, and I've used different forms at different times, and some have worked better than others. But at any rate, when I get them to their sixth step, and this is really probably one of the steps that's helped me the most, I have them go over their fourth step and just highlight all the attitudes and behaviors that need to change. And no one had ever done this with me before. So I have, for me, when I did this, I have a little list written in red of all the things that I'm going to ask God to remove in the seventh step. But this is my list that I can participate in. And I'll give you an example. The idea behind it is that, of course, in our journey is that we get free. And an example of one of the things that, and it's very simple, one of the things that kept me from being free was I wasn't feeling well a lot of the time, and it was because I wasn't getting any exercise. So in my six-step list, when I came up with this word sloth, taken from my fourth step, I knew that I was going to ask God to remove the sloth, but I could participate and I could take the action. And so that's worked very well for me. That tool has worked incredibly well for me. And I have seen people change so much because of it, because they end up going back to the sixth step when things get tough and they're not having a good day or a good week or a good month or something like that. They have their own custom-made work cut out for them that they can turn to. And again, that's custom for them. The eighth and the ninth step, of course, are very, very sacred. And I get a real kick out of watching women get excited about making out their eighth step list. I see people who are like, 18 doing it, and people who are like 50 doing it. And all of them are like making out this list of the people they've harmed. And it's amazing to me the enthusiasm that they have for getting ready and prepared to do their ninth step. And the ninth step is something that is probably the most freeing thing. Aside from writing a fourth step inventory for me, the ninth step is probably one of the most freeing things I think that was just ever invented. And not invented, but, I used to go to confession a lot as a child and as a teenager and in college and stuff, and I never got the kind of freedom or the change in behavior that came as a result of my ninth step. And so I try to impart that to the women, that they can get that too. And there's some really, really powerful ones out there, things that you think that people couldn't possibly make amends for, they make amends for. But I think that the other thing, and this is if you're sponsoring, and I hope you're really listening to this part, there are things that happen to, and I'm just talking about women, there are things that happen to women when they're 2, 5, 7, 9, 12, 13, 15, 16, and 17 that happen to them as children. And they think that they need to go something in the field of being molested or someone, some incest in the family. And I talk about these things because I do see it, physical abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse. But if there are things that have happened to someone as a child, and for men too, I find it so painful to hear them say, I need to make an amends to that person, because I've had a resentment against them for molesting me, and I'm like, those are the things that I handle with extra care because it is very, very rampant in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I have a group of women around me who have been through that, who have had those experiences, who I call on. And I also have a friend who has made amends to a parent, to a family member for incest. And how that worked was she wanted to be free of the resentment because the resentment was killing her, and she was a real low-bottom alcoholic and couldn't drink. She can't drink. But the resentment was killing her, and what she did was she prayed and prayed and prayed to be willing to make this amends to the person who abused her. And one day, she suddenly was able to get over the resentment, and then she didn't have to make the amends for the resentment, because it really would have been really hard and inappropriate for her to make an amends to her abuser. And but what happened was she got free of the resentment in the process. And so I, as a sponsor, sort of forward the women who have had experiences like that to her. And one of the things that I feel is very important is that it's not just me sponsoring them. Yes, I'll hear your secrets, I'll hear this and that, but I try to connect all of the women that I work with each other and with other strong women in the program. And it really works beautifully. There are other women who sponsor a number of people too, and some of their girls come to me for different things, and it keeps us all hopefully kind of somewhere in the middle that we don't have all the answers. As I said about the spiritual journey that they're on, that they get a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps. I was talking to someone today, and she said as a result of all of the steps. And my first couple of years in AA, I never got past the fifth step because it's just the way it was back then. It was very, very fellowship oriented, and no one had ever really pushed me a little further. Maybe they didn't know, maybe it's just not the way it had been done, but things seem to have gotten a little bit watered down, and so now I make sure that I get my girls through all of the steps so that they can have a spiritual awakening and work with others. And I say to them that I'm working with you so you can go work with five other women, because I know you can work with five other women, unless you've got five children. But it's sort of another part of what I take as my own personal responsibility that you carry this message to other alcoholics and practice these principles in all your affairs. And there are some women I sponsor who don't like people. They don't want to hang out with a lot of people. And some who are really fellowship-oriented, and some who are isolators, and so I try to nudge the isolators more towards working with others and joining in with others a little bit at a time. And sometimes it takes 2, 3, 4, or 5 years. And then others I try to get them a little bit more out of the fellowship role and into more really heavily sponsoring women and maybe doing big book workshops and taking people through the work, through the book. But at any rate, it's a journey that I would say I've learned more probably in the last 2 years than I did in my first 9 years of recovery. And I'm very, very grateful to a woman who stopped her life to help me every Monday night and take me through the book line by line, sentence by sentence, and I'll tell you why I do that. I was 34 years old, and I had just had a nervous breakdown, but I didn't know it was a nervous breakdown. I ended up in the psych ward of Morristown Memorial Hospital, not knowing my problem was alcohol, and I wanted to die. And just after I had gotten out, my little sister was with me, and she was just in college. And she took me to see a priest in Morris Plains the night I ripped a phone out of a wall. Because I hated myself so much, and I didn't feel there was any solution for my problems, and I didn't know what my problems were, and I thought I was crazy. And she took me to see this priest in Morris Plains, and this priest stopped every single thing he did just to sit there and talk to me for about an hour and a half at dinner time. And I remember sitting there thinking, well, he's a priest. This is what he does. You know, you're supposed to tend the sheep, and I'm a sheep. So, but now looking back on it, I realize that this man could have been having an incredible bottle of wine with his best friend that had just arrived from Ireland that night, you know, and he stopped what he did to take care of me. Or his mother could have been in town. And as looking back, there's a lot of people who did that for me. So I'm not one to push anybody aside in Alcoholics Anonymous. And there was someone in here a while back who said something about, you know, this group doesn't work with newcomers. And I remember that night I didn't hear her actually say it. I heard it on tape. And I had been down in the basement that night working with a newcomer, so I had missed the meeting because I was working with a newcomer. And I just thought, you know, this group works just fine. It works with more newcomers than any other group that I know, as far as the depth of the commitment. But at any rate, I essentially try to impart what was given to me, which is the solution is I had a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps, and that your job when I'm done with you hopefully will be to carry the message and to practice the principles in all your affair. And I think that one of the final things I want to say is that I would never grow unless I worked with you guys, because the newcomers teach me things or make me do things that raise my level of spirituality. They make me change. You know, there's something about the newcomers that is just remarkably pure. And I learn from their childlike behavior, and I learn from their fear, and I learn from the day they do their fifth step and the fact that I get to see that they have hope. So working with them brings me, you know, a lot closer to God. And as I said in the beginning, I do this for me. And if you'll carry the message, I'll be really happy about that, because then you'll stay sober. And not everyone I've sponsored has stayed sober. One of the people I'm closest to in the world is drinking. And I found with her, she's not in her first year, so I won't go into it very much, but I found with her that I have done everything that I possibly could. But with a first-year person, what I will say is I don't want them drinking on my watch if I can help it. So if there's anything I can do to go that extra length, even though I am tired some nights, I will do that, because there are people who have wanted to commit suicide that I've met. And between me and a couple of other people, they're still alive, and certainly God. And... thank you. Thank you.